Hey, before we get started with today's show, I wanted to share with everyone something I thought you might find interesting. Today marks the debut of Scott Van Pelt's new podcast, SV Pod. If you are a fan of all the shenanigans at SVP and Russillo, I'm sure you'll dig it. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to SV Pod now, as well as subscribe to The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. 2020 is going to be the year you get it together, right? Join the gym, start that diet. All right, you're not going to do that, but how about getting out of that job and into a career in information technology? There are millions of unfilled cybersecurity positions in the U.S. right now, and My Computer Career is training people to fill them. No IT experience or education? No problem. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You can start your new life as an information technology professional in months, not years. Attend classes on campus or live online just a few times a week to get what you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire our students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited and financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so make new year and new career your resolution and take the free career evaluation today at mycomputercareer.edu. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. On this episode of The Right Time, we'll talk about some of y'all playing them video games and the game start cheating. That's always fun. We'll also talk about Marshawn Lynch and the Astros. Well, they was out here cheating the game, but first, national champion LSU. Yes, national champions. LSU beat the brakes off Clemson last night. I did not think that game would go that way. I thought there was a chance that Clemson could win. In fact, I thought Clemson was actually going to win it. Let me stop being half booty about this. I thought that Clemson was actually going to win it. But I definitely didn't think they was going to get the brakes beat off them. And, well, this, ladies and gentlemen, is the voice of a national champion.
Go Tigers. 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 Go Tigers.
There he is, Gabe. I guess you don't know no Cajun folk in your California existence, huh?
No, I do not.
So one thing that's interesting, and Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated wrote a fantastic profile of Ed Orgeron that I encourage you to check out. And one thing that, you know, it was a heavy emphasis on where Orgeron's from, La Rose, Louisiana, Cajun country up there. And so they go there and talk to the people. And one thing that people kept saying was that, you know, they don't understand why it is that it's okay to make fun of the way that Ed Orgeron talks. Now, of course, the person that was quoted in the story gave is like Mexican, African, Asian. You can't talk about them. Yes, African, Gabe, African. Went all the way there. I'm like, okay, maybe that's just the way y'all talk. But me personally, I actually have never had any inclination to make fun of Ed Orgeron's accent. The accent isn't what throws me off. It's the gravel. Like, Ed Orgeron could talk like me. That would be the part that throws me off. Like, he has an Ed Orgeron accent as far as I'm concerned. And I'm glad he has it in large part. I can't remember if we talked about it on here. But, you know, Gabe, when I was a kid, college football coaches were a lot more fun than they are now. Like, all these cats is filthy, stinking rich and buttoned up and corporate types. That is not what Ed Orgeron is.
Definitely an absence of character when it comes to college football coaches. They're all like Terminator machines now.
14 years ago, reportedly, this dude took over coaching at LSU and asked his players in his first meeting with them if any of them were still loyal to the previous coach. And some of those guys raised their hands, at which point Ed Orgeron ripped off his shirt and challenged anyone to fight. Gabe, that guy is now a national champion.
He also has been known to rip off his shirt and chug multiple Red Bulls at the same time.
Yes, because, you know, I don't know if you know this, but he's a recovering alcoholic. Like, he's been sober now for 20 years. So I guess that is what he had to plug in. The idea of Ed Orgeron hopped up on Red Bull. Gabe, I don't want that.
Yeah, he doesn't need more energy.
Nah, I don't feel like that's so safe. But like, he himself is, he's an interesting story, but we're going to try too hard to put this into what is an easy box. And the easy box is the Ed Orgeron, nobody believed in you sort of thing, right? Now, to be fair, we were given reasons not to believe in Ed Orgeron. This is not simply an idea that this is this man that was underestimated because of the way he talked. No, he had that job at Ole Miss and was an abject failure. Like, there was no way around it. It was an embarrassing tenure that he had there. Then he also attached himself to Lane Kiffin, which is something that didn't necessarily gonna make people be like, okay, that's my guy. So Kiffin got fired on the tarmac after that loss to Arizona State that year. And then Orgeron wound up being the interim coach. They closed out the season pretty well. And then Orgeron was not offered the head coaching position at USC. In fact, they told him that he could stick around for a raise as the assistant head coach, and he did not want that, and so he left. We've seen it reported since then that the boosters at USC did not like his voice, and that's the reason why they did not hire him. Maybe that's the case, right? Like, I think that's an easy thing to throw out there and make it very simple, especially considering this is a guy that a lot of us didn't even think LS damn you should have been hired, and that definitely wasn't because of his voice, because he's from around there, right? This wouldn't have gone the same way if Ed Orgeron was coaching at USC. Like, there are a number of reasons why it wouldn't have gone the same way. One thing is that if Ed Orgeron's going to be your head coach and you're going to have the level of success that LSU has, you're going to have to spend a lot of money around him. And that's the same thing as what's going on with Dabo Swinney. Neither one of these guys are coming to kill you with their strategy. What they've done is establish programs that both guys that tend to be detail-oriented in the ways that they go about things. And then you get the best coordinators and assistant coaches that money can buy. LSU has the highest paid defensive coordinator in America. LSU went over there and got Joe Brady from New Orleans and then brought him in to work with Emsinger. And Joe Brady is now about to get some gigantic raise also. Those are things that wouldn't happen at USC. USC, you're not operating in a state that produces 14, 15, 16, 4 or 5 star players per year. And you as LSU basically go in there and get whichever one of those that you want. California produces more players, but go look at the recruiting list for this year and see who's going to USC. They ain't. In fact, they ain't going really anywhere in California right now, but they're not. What we got here and what is cool about this story to me as it relates to Orgeron is this is a dude who is perfectly fit for the job that he has. Like, when he got that job, we had Ryan Clark on the radio, and Ryan said he's not the perfect coach, but he's the perfect coach for us. And Ryan, because I was like, really? Because I was out on this hire when they made it. Absolutely out on it. Especially, hiring the interim is something I just never think is a good idea. But Ryan was like, look, man, I've been walking around this program, you know, since he's gotten here. I see the effect that he's had on the people. I see the way he treats people, everything else. I'm telling you right now, this guy is the coach for us. And that's what he is. He is the coach for them. They've got their 20-year sort of guy to stay in that job. Because one thing you don't really have that much of in college these days is those guys who stick around there for 20 years, in part because you used to have guys who could stick around for 20 years while winning 6 or 7 games a year. Ain't nobody getting away with that one right now. Orgeron be there as long as he wants. I can't imagine there's any place that he wants to be at more than this. And so that's how we get Go Tigers. We're right here. And man, they built a machine. I am amazed by the caliber of talent that they put together on offense. Like, I've said all year long that I think that Alabama might have the best set of college receivers that I have ever seen. And I still hold to that idea that they may have the best set of college receivers that I've ever seen. But the difference between their receivers and LSU's is size. Right? Like, I felt like Alabama had a bunch of these, like, Jerry Rice, Odell Beckham type players at that size, and what they were getting you in was, as much as anything else, was their level of precision in running these routes and everything else. Gabe, them dudes for LSU are huge. Like, Jamar Chase is huge. Justin Jefferson is huge. And they wide open.
What's interesting about it, too, is they've finally been able to unleash all that talent because they've had some receivers for years. I mean, they had, people forget that they had Odell Beckham Jr., they had Jarvis Landry. It's like, were they all world receivers setting the world alight at LSU?
No. So for the time that those guys had at LSU, it really started to pick up when Zach Mettenberger turned a corner and started looking like a big-time college quarterback, and then all of a sudden the receivers looked like big-time college receivers. LSU's problem since Jamarcus Russell left has been mediocre quarterback play, right? And the thing about it with their quarterback play was it wasn't as if they weren't bringing in highly regarded quarterbacks. Like, they weren't out there just, you know, rolling out 2 and 3 stars, and then those guys were playing like 2 and 3 stars. They were rolling out 4 stars who were playing like 3 stars. Like, I think the most hyped up quarterback recruit that they had in the Les Miles run was Ryan Perilloux. And I mean, that came with his own like set of issues and everything else. But all those guys they were throwing out there, you're like, man, them quarterbacks are sorry. But people wanted those quarterbacks. It wasn't like LSU was the only team that was showing up to get those guys. Les just did a horrible job with them once he had them. And what I think happened that helped with Ogeron was, Ogeron is a defensive line coach, but he's kind of like the situation that John Harbaugh was in Baltimore this year, where he looked around and was like, look, man, I don't have any ideology I'm wedded to. Let's just figure out whatever it is. And so you get a guy like Ogeron coaching as the head coach of the team. He's not going to be locked into this is the way we have to do it, because at least on offense, he's not going to be a guy that has that thought process about what it is that you have to do. And so what's he willing to do? Go get Joe Brady, go get whoever it is and figure out how to make this offense work. Whereas Les Miles was an offensive coordinator. Like, he was an offensive guy. Therefore, he wanted to run the offense that he wanted to run. And that's what ultimately wound up causing them those levels of issues. Ogeron just like, yeah, man, whatever. Just going to win. All right, cool. And then they do it with Joe Burrow. And look, I don't know how many people watched Joe Burrow play last year. Joe Burrow threw something like 15, 16 touchdowns or something like that. Like, I don't think there was any way to see the season that he put up this year, which is quite possibly the best passing season in the history of these Power 5 conferences. Possibly the best passing season in the history of the NCAA. That dude threw 60 touchdowns against 6 interceptions in the SEC. Like, yo, that's bananas. That's bananas. How? I struggle to figure out how it is possible for that dude to have been that good. And for me, outside of his, like, mobility in the pocket and the ability to get some chunk plays when you need him, there's nothing that really jumps off the page about him to me. Now, I think that pocket mobility and the ability to handle that stuff, the more I look at the league, is probably as important as anything else. But that's what I see there. I never would have seen a guy who turned out to be this damn good. And Gabe, you better get ready, boy. They're going to be throwing Joe Burrow all up in our face next year.
You know what did jump off the page, though, last night?
What's that?
Sneaky fast.
They just can't help themselves, can they?
Sneaky fast times two, too. Because they was like, oh, Trevor Lawrence, he can really scoot.
They just can't help themselves. Like, it ain't even like white dudes who can move like that are new. But it wasn't nothing deceptive about how fast he was. It wasn't like dudes were like, oh my gosh, wait, how'd he get 10 yards past me? No, there's no look, man, this is the fun. You want to know what the funny part about deceptive speed is? When the white dude is fast, it ain't never deceptive because you're so damn shocked. You understand what I'm saying? Like, when a white dude is fast, nobody's like, wow, I didn't realize he was moving that fast. They'd be like, damn, look how fast that white boy is running. Oh, little sneaky. Sneaky fast. And see, that's the thing, man. We keep saying this stuff over and over and over again. These cats are not required to keep saying this stuff. Why do they keep doing it? Like, people like me have been repeatedly telling folks, hey, man, you sound really stupid when you say that. They can't help themselves. They still keep going on that same kick, on that same kick. But that makes me wonder, Gabe, anybody going to say that Joe Burrow's style of quarterback doesn't work?
Nope. Anytime a white quarterback can move a little bit, people treat it as if he's like reached the last, he's reached the pantheon of like perfect quarterback play because he's got everything else sewn up, right? Yeah. Like the mental part of the game, it's sound because he's a white QB.
Dude, the standard is so low that Pablo was talking about Gardner Minshew. Talk about he's not used to seeing somebody with that melanin quotient move like that. And it was pocket moving. And I'm like, yo, I thought that's what white boys did. I thought that's what they was about. Pocket presence. Damn, now we go act like that's brand new too? But no, this Burrow thing, I mean, he's going to be the number one pick in the draft. And look, I'll tell you this. I ain't no super predictor per se. I watched LSU play this year in that game against Texas. Didn't enjoy it, but whatever. And I forget what game I watched him play after that. But I watched Joe Burrow play one series. And I said, oh, okay, here's how this is going to go. If they beat Alabama, he's going to win the Heisman Trophy, and he's going to be the number one overall pick. Like, it was immediate. Didn't take me anything to see that that was going to happen. And then what do you know? They beat Alabama, and now Joe Burrow is going to be the number one overall pick. And good for him. I thought his speech at the Heisman was moving, right? I appreciated him shouting out the homies back in Ohio who ain't got enough to eat, right? Because honestly, I feel like those, like, that is a set of people that don't get talked about nearly enough. I think he brought some light to something that a lot of people would not consider, right? Like, I was down for that. When me and Mina talked about that, we checked his Twitter likes. I kind of like what he's about. I see what he's got going here. And man, that dude gonna be the king of Louisiana for the rest of time. Of time. And then when he gets to the league, you know, Gabe, we talked about this a few weeks ago. I know this might make some people uncomfortable, but it's the truth. Is there a legitimately good white quarterback in the NFL younger than Matthew Stafford?
Ryan Tannehill.
Right. You see what I'm saying? Like, you can throw in, like, Tannehill where we're still trying to figure it out with him. You know, the, like, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy Garoppolo class of players, right? You could throw them in there. But Andrew Luck being gone, you know, they ain't really produced a lot of really good white quarterbacks in the last 10 years. Like, you can go look at it. Check it out yourself. Here's why I bring it up. This league has always marketed itself around white quarterbacks, right? Like, that's the basis of what they're selling and to get people to watch on TV. And even if you watched our broadcast last night of the game, big long feature on Trevor Lawrence. He's going to give you a big long feature on Joe Burrow, right? Look, man, that's what sells out here. That's what at least some of the people want to see. We ain't got a whole lot right now for the people to see. So you going to see a lot of Joe Burrow. Trevor Lawrence, you coming around next year? Oh, you might get a lot of you. Justin Herbert, come out here and have three good games, baby. We going to be all over it. Gabe, you heard the way they be out here talking about Danny Dimes? Game thirsty, man. This is what they sell. Like, beyond anything about, like, biases, conscious, otherwise, or anything else, this is their tried and true marketing technique. And they don't have those guys to market. At least they have not been coming into the league recently in that way. Joe Burrow, a lonely nation, turns its eyes to you. Man, I be feeling bad. Not really feeling bad for you, but you'll understand what I'm saying once I say it. It's nothing like in hockey, for example. Let's throw hockey out there as an example of sport here. Gabe, I ain't out here talking about no hockey. No disrespect. I just don't really know. You know, I'm not the person to do that, right? But I ain't going to be the cat that's out here talking about no hockey. Okay. But if we had some major giant, like, hockey cocaine scandal or something like that, all of a sudden, hockey going to be everywhere. All kinds of people who don't talk about hockey going to be the ones to talk about it. And that would include me. And so I hate it. I understand why people, if you don't like it, like, oh, you don't never talk about my sport until something going wrong, right? You're right. That must be annoying. Anyway, baseball fan, get ready to be annoyed because we about to talk about the Astros and that cheating. So, Gabe, so this is, correct me, let me make sure I got this right, right? Because you've checked out the stuff, right?
I have.
Okay. So, the video replay booth, because they got replay in baseball now. Astros got a video replay booth. The guy in the replay booth was up there deciphering the signs. He then called down to the dugout, and was it Alex Cora that would pick up the phone? And he would get, and he would find out what the sign situation was, or find out what the pitch was. And then when they find out what the pitch was, they would then give some signal from the dugout, and then the batter would know what the pitch was, and then they go from there.
Yeah, I was listening to Jeff Passan this morning on the Daily. The part that surprised me the most was they were talking about how they would bang on a trash can
yes.
for whatever the pitch call was. And I thought, wouldn't that, like, raise a little bit of a red flag? You just hear from the dugout, every pitch or, you know, every batter, whatever, just dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, it's like a rally. Maybe they think it's like a rally cap. You know what I mean? They're just doing it for good luck, right? Just like to try to get it all going. Because have you seen some of the videos that people have put up of, like, just, you know, watching Astros games and hearing that and then seeing what happened next?
Honestly, I knew these guys were cheaters. I wasn't down to be, like, checking out and finding the receipts. I knew it was going
Tell on. Me more, Dodger fan.
Well, there's not much to say other than that this is really, really disappointing. People are talking about, oh, the hammer has been laid down on the Astros. Well, that banner's still going to be hanging up at the end of the day. That's all that matters.
What about your man, Yu Darvish? Remember that?
Yep.
Oh, he was pitching for y'all when that happened, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. Vilified. And people were talking about, oh, Yu Darvish tipping his pitches. Yu Darvish tipping his pitches. You know who's tipping his pitches? Kershaw.
And this is Kershaw, maybe the best left-handed pitcher we've ever seen. Like, the game gets real easy, and I think bringing out Kershaw like that is a great point about why this is such a thing. That game gets a lot easier when you know what pitch is coming. It gets so much easier that Clayton Kershaw, who legitimately has an argument for being the best left-handed pitcher of all time, all of a sudden he turns into a regular dude if people know what's coming. I don't know if it's fair to say everybody's trying to figure out what the signs are, but this is what seems like what everybody's down with here, okay? If you put the signs in people's faces and you figure it out using your big old brain, nobody's really tripping on that. Because that's the same thing as tipping pitches to me, you know? So if you get the ball on the mound and every time you throw a curveball, you open up your glove so that you can change your grip, you did that, right? And even this, like if your sign for steal, for example, is to stand in the third base coach, take his index finger and put it on his temple and then point forward like a first down. If that's your sign for stealing, well, you deserve it when they have a pitch out, right? Like you've earned what that is if you're just giving it away. But you going through all this stuff to make it hard and these cats are still up there like putting on their Dakota rings to figure it out. Man, come on, baby. We got to have some measure of respect for the game. We all understand that the whole reason that we need signs is because you can't just have the catcher back there like, I don't know what's coming, right? We need to have, for safety reasons, all those guys need to have some measure of communication. So to stop the catcher from getting busted in the face by the ball, they got to have the signs. Okay, cool. You understand why that is. Why you got to be out there trying so hard? Why you got to? Come on, man. That's just going a little bit too far. And so the Astros in that 2017 World Series game, remind me who they played?
I don't remember.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, apparently this is what happened in that World Series. What do we had? A.J. Hinch, the manager, got fired. Jeff Luhnow, the general manager, got fired. Alice Cora, who was the bench coach and is now the manager in Boston, he's probably going to get fired. Did you see, by the way, what A.J., like, why it was that A.J. Hinch got fired? He wasn't even in on the con, but he found out about the con, and he disapproved of it greatly, right? He made it clear he wasn't here for this, and he took a baseball bat, and he smashed a screen to let him know that he wasn't down with it, but never at any point did he say, now stop.
Yeah, didn't do enough, I think is the right word.
Didn't actually do anything, because what he could have said was, I'm in charge here, y'all stop. And he didn't do that. They just let that thing keep on riding out.
How about the 2018 World Series? Who's playing in that? The Red Sox and the...
Oh, yeah, that did happen. I forget who they played.
Yeah, and then who was the manager of the Red Sox in that World Series?
Alice Cora.
Yeah, yeah. They played the Dodgers.
Oh, they did again?
Yeah, yeah, both years, back to back, yep.
So you're a little heated.
A little heated, yeah. Just a little bit.
Damn, y'all caught it back to back. I did not... Dag.
Tell me about it. I mean, this is crazy. This is absolutely bonkers. And all that happens is, oh, $5 million. Fine. Take away the draft picks and you lose your manager and your GM. That's a drop in the bucket for the Astros.
What do you think it should be?
They should take away the banners.
But will that matter? Are they going to give it to you?
No, I wouldn't want it. I think that they just shouldn't be allowed to have it because that's the only deterrent, right?
Well, the only thing is you can't take away the memories. Like, we've seen this in college football. Take the banner. Nobody cares. Like, if you ask me 20 years down the line who won the 2017 World Series, I'm going to say the Astros.
I think it matters, though, because, like, 20, 30 years from now, when memories kind of drip away, generations advance, and you try to, you know, check the receipts and be like, oh, we've got 6 rings, we've got 5 rings, you have one less. That matters.
I think there's something to that. I mean, the 30 for 30 on this is going to be cracking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm ready for that. I'm here for it. But it also seemed, basically, I felt like that report that baseball put out about this could be summarized as follows. You tell me if I'm wrong here. Man, y'all some dirt bags. Like, that felt like what all of it was. The rest of the league, or baseball, hates the Astros, right? Just don't like the way they handle business, don't like the way they treat people. And by the way, that was in the report, is that basically this is a rampant, lawless gang with no regard for protocol, no regard for custom. All they care about is the bottom line, the results. And let us not forget, this, by the way, is the same franchise that had to fire that assistant general manager dude for the stuff with Osuna. Remember that with the women in the clubhouse?
I remember that.
Yeah, like this is all the same team. And they're just like, yo, man, the only thing that matters is winning. Keep it in mind, this team was so bad a few years ago. And it was also, to be fair, this was tied in also with a dispute about this channel being put on different cable packages. But they were drawing literally zero ratings in Houston because they were so bad when they went and decided to tank this whole thing out. And so many people gave them so much credit for their willingness to tank this out and be terrible. And now look what happens on the other side. These are the smart guys. This is the way that you go about doing it. Maybe, just maybe, the way they went about doing this was actually cheating. Like, not just an unseemly kind of violation of the social contract of what you provide as owning a baseball team and charging people money for tickets and all that stuff. Now, maybe the reason that they are where they are on this is just because they'd be out here cheating.
Man, they've been held up as like the model franchise.
Yep.
For the last few years. Oh, you know, you want to do things the right way? Do it the Astros way.
Yeah, and see, the thing is, even those people who were saying that, and this is where I look at them funny, they knew that the right way per the Astros was whatever it took to win. Like, they were aware of this. There was no aesthetic quality to this for anybody to emulate. All there were the nuts and bolts of it, and they decided they've got all this data, and then they're going to do everything they can to manipulate, to use the data to figure it out, and come up with the right outcomes. And I think that that's okay, like, right, as an idea to win. But think about this with baseball with all these data guys. Like, right? You know, I don't know if you saw this thing where apparently it was reported that the Cleveland Browns want their new head coach to, like, turn in game plans so the analytics guys can look over them.
Oh, man, I saw that.
Yeah, they go back from there. What has happened with baseball, basically, baseball teams are no longer run by the manager. Baseball teams are run by the numbers guys. And what they're basically doing is crunching all these numbers, not simply giving the information to the manager as something to supplement, sending it to the manager and saying, boom, this is the lineup for today. Boom, this is the lineup for tomorrow. Like that, you know, and the Browns, this thing's not going to work because I think the Dee Podesta, a baseball guy, is going to try to usurp the power in that way. Because the problem with the dorks in all of this is they all believe they know more about these games than the people who are actually on the ground. Right? They have minimal value for what goes on the ground other than basically in like an overseer capacity. But they have no appreciation for the knowledge that is picked up along the way. And it's like, look, we got these numbers. We're going to crunch this and then we're going to go from there. There it is. That is like, that's not good. That's not fun. There's nothing to that. And I understand why everybody wants to win, so forth and so on. Yeah, I get it. You want to be as cold as you got to be in order to go about this winning, but there's no fun in this. Nothing. And so you go back and look at the Astros, and if you're an Astros fan, you've certainly enjoyed the winning. You've certainly found, like, you know, found something in that you're going for. But this just all just feels, ugh. Like, this doesn't feel like what anybody got into it for. And I don't want to get, like, super crazy moralistic about the cheating element of it, because that's how I felt when people did the thing with steroids. But the thing for me about steroids after a point was, by the time we found out about it, it was so out of hand that I couldn't knock anybody if they got caught up in the wave at that point. That's part of why I don't have this, like, I have a different attitude about Mark McGwire than I have about Barry Bonds. And the reason I have a different attitude about Mark McGwire than I have about Barry Bonds is that Mark McGwire very obviously got on that train before it was just rampant. Go look at the arc of Mark McGwire's career, where he went from being 49 home runs as a rookie in 1987, and then you get to like 91 or 92 or something like that, and this dude can't even hit his weight. And then I think it was 95 or 96, all of a sudden it just gets back super cracking, right? With a lot of telltale signs, one might say, of somebody using the juice. Barry Bonds gets around there in 1999, and by that point, he's just looked around. He's seen McGwire. He's seen Sosa. He just had 37 home runs with 122 RBIs with a 410 on base percentage. I want to say it was 1,000 OPS, like an insane year, and nobody cared because of these other cats that were over there. Like, I felt like baseball did Barry Bonds a disservice because they did not protect his greatness from these imposters. And so I got why he then went over and made the turn, because the whole thing had gotten out of hand. That's not what we got here with the Astros. They seem to be, like, not the only people stealing signs, but they seem to have been going to a level that nobody else was. Or we're going to find out that everybody's doing the exact same thing. I guess that's possible. That's what we're going to hear. And if everybody's doing this, man, this isn't fun. Like, I don't need to get in this finger wagging or anything else. All this stuff is supposed to be fun. And the dorks on all levels keep making it less fun. Stop letting dorks mess with our fun. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about Marshawn Lynch. But first, it's a new year. Perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience to invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, guys. Marshawn Lynch plays for Seattle. Well, played for Seattle. Or plays for Seattle. I don't really know how to put it. Either way, Seattle was in the playoffs. They played a game against Green Bay. They lost the game to Green Bay. Marshawn Lynch had a touchdown. And for some reason, in this return of Marshawn Lynch, Gabe, do you understand this? He feels like talking to us now?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Like, I don't feel like he talked to us when he played with the Raiders, did he? I feel like I would have seen some of the clips.
No, he didn't. There was kind of a break there in his press career where he was doing all these Skittles commercials.
Yeah.
At the end of the Seattle deal, and then he just kind of came back.
Yeah, but he wasn't talking to us. Like, he do that stuff for the money. He ain't talking for free, it seemed to be. But we've seen a little bit more. He's been kind of, like, nice and polite to people when it came time to talk to the media. And it always seemed to me also, like, the look on his face that he would have sometimes when those cameras would come around. Like, there were a couple times he looked, like, bugged out. Like, it was really getting to him. Like, I don't know him well enough, and I don't want to speak on what his constitution is, because I don't know. But it would, the way it looked to me was like, okay, so there appears to be some measure of anxiety about dealing with these situations. And I can understand that, because there's situations that I deal with in life now that were just fine that I developed a whole different level of anxiety about as I went farther along. I don't know what's going on, but either way, this time with Seattle, for whatever reason, he gave a couple polite, like, you know, I'll talk to y'all or whatever. And then after this game, for whatever reason, he guess he felt a little contemplative, and Marshawn Lynch came up to the podium, and this is what we got.
It's a vulnerable time for a lot of these young dudes, you feel me? They don't be taking care of their chicken right, you feel me? So if it was me, or if I had an opportunity to let these little young Sahabs know something, I say take care of y'all money, African, because don't last forever. Now, I done been on the other side of a retirement, and it's good when you get over there and you can do what the f*** you want to. So, I tell y'all right now, while y'all in it, take care of y'all bread, so when y'all done, go ahead and take care of yourself. So, while y'all at it right now, take care of y'all bodies, you know what I mean? Don't take care of y'all chicken, you feel me? Don't take care of y'all mentals, because look, we ain't lasting that long. You know, I had a couple of players that I played with that, you know what I mean? They no longer here no more. They no longer. So, I mean, you feel me? Start taking care of y'all mentals, y'all bodies, and y'all chicken from when y'all, you know, ready to walk away. You walk away and you be able to do what you want to do.
Hey, Gabe, you grew up the way I did. You got to understand. Marshawn loved the kids. He out there looking out for them.
Chicken. I hadn't heard that
I've heard that before.
Okay.
I've heard chicken as a slang term for money. I can't say I know where exactly, but it didn't hit me like, oh, he just broke out something new. Like, I feel like I'd heard that before. Now, here's the thing. You are from Bay-ish area. Is that a fair way to put it?
That's fair.
Oakland is like the slang capital of the world.
Oh, hell yeah.
It is the slangiest place in the world. Like, okay, I have been, Oakland might be my favorite city in the United States, at least where Oakland was. I don't know what Oakland is no more, but where Oakland was, Oakland might be my favorite city in the United States. I have been to Oakland one time, but what I do know is a bunch of dudes from Oakland, and they are all hilarious. Like, every single one of them. Like, when a dude from Oakland starts talking, it's just like, okay, let's hear what this cat from Oakland is going to say. It is that they are the we own what we do, unlike anybody I came around. And by the way, it don't matter how accomplished that person from Oakland is or is not. They are just all totally fascinating to me, right? And by the way, chart it back a little bit, they almost all from Texas. That's the way it goes. And Marshawn Lynch, for whatever reason, has made the decision that he was going to be the man for the town full on. He and Marcus Peters both are just like, code switch, what's that? This is how I talk all the time. And I love it. And the biggest reason why I love it when he does that is he knows, you know, what he's talking about. right? Because the purpose for like a standardization of the language is really so you could be comprehensible, so that people can understand you, right? We come up with a way to talk about, we talk about things in different settings where everybody understands the terms. And so we have a notion or an idea of like a standard English or whatever language you got, they all got them, that everybody knows and understands. And so when you come into situations that are of mixed company, for lack of a better term, you lean toward the standard because the standard is what everybody knows. It also just so happens that the standard is kind of in line generally with just like how white folks talk. Not every white person, because obviously Ed Orgeron, but, you know, just kind of in line with how white people talk. And so there's an idea that you got to like get to that standard place so that white people will be able to understand you. But we be underestimating white folks, man. And I feel like white folks be underestimating themselves, which is really strange, because you can make a fair argument that on the average, maybe not so on the average, but like the median white person, you know, there's a good chance he might believe he's smarter than everybody else. But then all of a sudden you don't talk the exact same way as him, and he turned, I'm dumb, deaf, and blind. I can't figure this out. I'm in a swirl of confusion, right? That's where it goes. Now, Marshawn Lynch is like, man, y'all know what I'm talking about here. Even if you ain't know what chicken was then, you figured out pretty quickly what chicken was. You know why? Context clues. Most of y'all went to school. And he just made this call like, yeah, either y'all know what I'm talking about or y'all don't know what I'm talking about, but y'all know what I'm talking about. So I'm just keeping talking about this the way that I'm talking about it and then go from there. But what's wild about it is, as a result, do you see all the places that he winds up? Like, he's the guy that's hanging out with all these tech cats with all the money. He's doing the show, what's the dude's name that be taking him out in the wilderness? Bear Grylls or something? Yeah, he's out there doing that kind of stuff. He's up there on 60 Minutes. People say they call Marshawn Lynch and they're like, you know, where's he been? He's like, every time I text him, he's in a different country. Like, without any level of compromise, he's ingratiated himself to a point where he just goes wherever he wants on the strength of being Marshawn Lynch. Like, he is, in a lot of ways, like an Allen Iverson type figure, except there's no real controversy around Marshawn Lynch with it. Now, again, part of it too, Iverson has stuff that surrounded him and events and the people who are around him and the things that they did that got attached to him that took him to a different place. And maybe it's also Allen Iverson walked so that Marshawn Lynch could run, you know, like maybe it's that kind of situation. I don't know, but it is wild to me that Marshawn Lynch has become like a bit of a beloved figure without doing any of the things that people swear you have to do to be beloved. Like, it feels like the ultimate moral of the story when it comes to Marshawn Lynch is, even the people who might not like you, they respect dignity, right? Like, even if you enforcing your own dignity hits those people in a way that makes them uncomfortable, when it all shakes out, man, people fundamentally respect those who are insistent upon being who they are. And the thing about Marshawn Lynch is he's being who he is, but it's harmless. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like him insisting that is causing anybody any trouble other than the fact that they might think he's supposed to do it a different way. But it's not causing anybody any harm. And now he's become that guy. And he can do so much stuff and basically do whatever it is that he wants to do. And it's, for me, so wildly impressive, right? And I say that impressive as somebody who, like, you know, tries to do some business stuff and seeing what he's pulled off and more anything, man. To me, it's impressive just seeing this as an adult, as a man, as a human, you know, as somebody who sees a guy that's made the decision, like, nah, man, this is the way that I'm going to do it. Maybe you rock with it, maybe you don't, but I'm going to take whatever I can get based off me doing this the way that I want to do it. And salute to him. I mean, although I don't know if he's ever going to retire, Gabe, he might just keep showing up to play a couple games, like, honestly, till he's 40 years old.
And he could do that because it's Marshawn, right?
Yeah. And by the way, I would not do that. You get too old for that stuff, dog. Enjoy the rest of the world.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from tech.
I'm Dalvin Brown, and I cover tech for USA Today. The security camera company Ring admitted to firing 4 employees who were snooping on users' feeds. The Amazon-owned company said that it let go of 4 people who broke policy by needlessly spying on users. Ring said that it's continuing to enhance its security practices to prevent other issues like this from happening again. But to make matters worse, it's already being sued by former customers. Some said that their home surveillance cameras were hacked, and one family said a mysterious man started speaking to their 8-year-old daughter over the camera's loudspeaker. Ring says that the cameras get hacked because people choose passwords that are either too short or passwords that are easy to be guessed. So the solution is to use lengthier, more complex passwords, I guess.
So the employees are snooping on the people.
Who could have seen that coming?
And you know what? I imagine it's wild tempting for them, right? Like, they have access to, I wonder, just what do people do when they're home by themselves? You know, you could just say, can you imagine the things that if you just randomly, if you had access to all the Ring cameras in America, right? Let's just say you had them all and you could just randomly pick one to hit the button on. Could you even imagine what you would see?
I guess that's what people are hoping to get with reality television. Like,
yes.
If you think about like Big Brother when that first came out,
yes.
I don't know how many years ago, that was like, oh man, we got hidden cameras in the house. The thing is like all the contestants for Big Brother knew that they were being filmed,
yeah.
So it wasn't quite a secret. It's like a Truman Show type of thing.
Yeah, but there's no telling what you might get just by hitting the button. I mean, I ain't putting that spot box in my house, but like I was thinking about this because like I know somebody, they got the cameras in their house because they have dog walkers come in.
Mm.
And I think in part it might be, you know, just as the deterrent for the dog walker. Here's what I'm saying. You might not be able to prove that the dog walker stole from you, but that don't really matter. You know if you got stole from. You know what I'm saying? Right? Like you know if you got stole from. You just got to get a new dog walker after that. You're not getting the stuff back. It's not going to happen. So take the spy box out of your house.
Is there really so much upside to this that the downside does not plummet it into your like frame of thought?
Here's the thing, man. Crime rates keep going down. The world or this country is safer than it's ever been. Yet we're more afraid than ever and keep getting more surveillance.
Whew. All right, this next story comes from Science.
This is Ivan Pereira, a reporter with ABC News Digital. Last week, a Scarsdale teen came into the spotlight in the astronomy community after it was announced he discovered a one-of-a-kind planet during his summer internship with NASA. Wolf Sukier, who was only 17, said he was examining data from a solar system located 1,300 light-years away from Earth when he found something unusual. The system, known as TOI-1338, contained two suns that orbit each other, and Sukier saw slight darkness in one of those suns. It turns out that darkness was a planet 6.9 times larger than Earth. After alerting his mentors, Sukier and his team spent the rest of the summer examining the data from the system to back up his hypothesis. And ultimately, they proved that they had discovered a planet that orbited the two suns. The discovery of the planet, dubbed TOI-1338-B, is extraordinary according to scientists because these types of objects are hard to detect. The method involves spotting the unique brightness changes in the stars that's created when the planet passes them. The new planet made such a pass every 93 to 95 days, according to NASA. Sukier and his team wrote a paper about their discovery, and they are trying to find a publisher. The teen said he will keep in contact with his mentors and pursue further astronomy studies in the future.
All right, so let me tell you a story. I went to college on a science scholarship, right? And I was in a summer program for this scholarship. So all the people in the program had the scholarship. And, you know, I've been like the smart kid in high school or whatever. And, you know, in some ways you kind of feel like isolated in that, especially as like the smart black kid at a school that didn't have like other black people in the smart black kid classes. Not that they weren't smart, but they just weren't in that space, right? And so I get to college and it's like, whoa, it's a collection of the black smart people, right? I no longer have to do all this tiptoeing to make sure that everybody is okay with this and I can lean in confidently into my smart. And of course, Gabe, I alienated everybody, right? Like, I was so obnoxious. I 22 years later, 23 now, this cast is still ain't trying to rock with me on the basis of that. Anyway, but I remember when I got my AP calculus test scores back and I passed the AP calculus test and I was such a jerk about that. Such a jerk about that. Gabe, that was me at 16 talking about my AP calculus test. Can you imagine how obnoxious this young man's going to be about finding a planet?
Yeah, he's going to be able to live the rest of his life off of that.
Can you imagine how insufferable he's going to be to everybody? There is no way that you can keep your ego in check in that way if you are in high school and you found a planet. You think I'm doing any work at school? I found a planet! Seriously! What are you telling me that, why am I here? Why am I here? I would be the worst person that you ever had to deal with under those circumstances. But here's what I'm saying right now, because I imagine that this young man put in an astonishing level of hard work to get here. I imagine that he, on top of being very, very bright, put in a whole lot of grind in order to get this, in order to get this done, right? And I applaud him for everything that he's did. That man found a planet. But I'm here to tell him, his parents, whoever's around him right now, okay? This summer, no books. None. Go have fun. Go meet some people. Go make some friends. You have already discovered a planet. You can afford to take a break. Go make sure you find you some happy, because you can find all the planets in the world and don't none of that matter if you don't find no happy. Because, Gabe, can you imagine how hard it is going to be pushing that dude deeper and deeper and deeper into the dork abyss to the point where he don't know how to talk to anybody other than the dorks, and then the dorks ain't going to rock with him because they're going to be jealous. He the one that's out here finding planets.
Yeah, he's going to be the kid that's like operating in between multiple grades.
Yes.
And is not able to really, it's kind of sad because he's not really going to be able to like hold on to one group of folks in specific because he's going to be like way younger than all the other folks he can discuss science with. So they're going to kind of discard him as the young cat.
Right.
And then all of the people that are in his grade is like, oh no, that's that dude that goes to the upper grades to talk about science.
Can you imagine like the level, like every world got haters, like the dork haters. Don't nobody want that. Don't nobody, young man, I'm just telling you, man, please, please enjoy yourself. Cause let me tell you something that is overrated in this world. Being good at stuff. Like, do you realize the lengths that people go through and like the things they do to interfere with their own happiness in the name of being good at something? Like the way that we send kids out to worlds that they're not really prepared for because you're good at something, and you know, if you're good at something, then we got to pour all the way in so that you can ultimately be great at the thing. But if you're great at the thing and you're not happy, then what's the big deal about being good at something? I think that what happens very often is that adults who wish they were really good at something see someone else have an opportunity to be really good at something, and then they want to push that person toward the chance to be really good. But it only matters if you're happy. That's it. And I'm just saying, I can see a solitary life on the other side of finding this planet. So take your time. You found the planet. You are the man. Now go to the movies.
All right, so this last story is really interesting because it's kind of a political story, but also a pop culture story. And the reporter let us down this morning, so I figured it would be pretty easy for me to give you a little synopsis. So Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, the Duchess of Sussex over there in the UK, announced last week that they plan to step back as senior members of Britain's royal family. After many months of reflection and internal discussions, we have chosen to make a transition this year in starting to carve out a progressive new role within this institution, the couple wrote in an Instagram post. We intend to step back as senior members of the royal family and work to become financially independent while continuing to fully support Her Majesty the Queen. Now, the Queen came out with a statement today that basically supports them without, like, committing to anything too much. But I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on this, Bo, because there's so many layers to it.
Here's what I want to know. How much money are they going to have to make to maintain the lifestyle that Prince Harry has grown accustomed to? That Harry, that's hers. That's the one, this one, right?
Correct.
Think about that for a second, right? Because I'm with them. They want to live a life of financial independence, and there's plenty of money out here for them to go make on their own. But how much money do you have to earn to maintain a lifestyle that our man Prince Harry is willing to go for? Like the sheets that he's growing up sleeping on, how much you think they cost?
Ungodly sums. Ungodly
right,
sums.
Right. Like that's the only part that I'm curious about is what it takes for Prince Harry to get to the life that he wants to live. Now, of course, there are all these heavier issues that come into this, which have a lot to do with the fact that Prince Harry married this black woman, and not everybody's been on board with the fact that he married this black woman, and only some people have been willing to say it out loud, and then other people just come around, and they just kind of sort of hint at it, and so forth and so on. And let me tell you something, if there ain't never been a greater affirmation that the idea of the one-drop rule is not something black people came up with, it is right here, because Meghan Markle, like, she is black, but even she's one of those people that doesn't really identify as black, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct, which is kind of interesting how quickly things have turned. Oh, no, she's like not black enough, but no, oh, now we're going to cover her in this particular way because she's black.
Yes. Yo, that's the thing. She ain't even leaning into this black, and they're like, oh, no, 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 no. We know. You black. And they like her. You can't even roll with this. She was on TV. Like, oh, okay, cool, got it. Right, we see, got it. Everything else, understand. This the game we playing? Okay, cool. All right, I guess. And so now they decide to move on, but that's a bold decision. It's not the first person to kind of abdicate their throne, but also, how do you think he would have played it if he was the heir? Are they making this decision? If he was going to be the king, how do they play this? Like, I don't have an answer for that, but I'm very curious. Like, how would they have played this if he was in line to be the king? And by the way, if he was in line to be the king, do you think the royal family would have allowed that wedding to go all the way through?
I remember originally when Harry and Meghan got married that there was some sort of question about whether they would be able to get married in the same church, Windsor Castle, that all the other royals got married at. And then that happened. But then there's always just been this little bit of awkwardness throughout their entire marriage, which is a little disheartening.
I also say this too. I hope this works out.
Yeah, right. Oh my God. They are going through like hell over this. And then what if they don't end up together in the end, man? And people are talking about, oh, the royal family has been torn apart.
Yo, they put a big fat bet off forever with this one. I hope for all parties involved. Can you imagine if that had to go to divorce court?
Oh, man. Gosh. Woo. Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's kind of like a it's me or the family type of thing, right?
Yeah.
Woo.
Hey, man, I tell you, I'm thinking about this, too. Prince Harry changed the game up for everybody whose mama don't like their spouse. Nah, you got to stay in now. This dude gave up the throne. He did that thing that Prince Akeem was talking about doing on the subway with Lisa, but he wasn't really going to do that. This dude did it. That's love.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
Bo, can you tell the people the inspiration for this week's social segment?
All right, man, you know, just got to thinking about, you know how that goes sometimes in life. You're playing a video game, you're playing Madden. Next thing you know, out of nowhere, you're blocking tight end, catches a 65-yard pass, scores a touchdown to win the game, or the other guy's blocking tight end does that, and you like, man, the game cheating. You know you can't do that in real life. You saw that. We've all been there. So I figured you would tell us about the times that you've been there.
Were you playing Madden recently?
No, I ain't played video games in forever. I just know what the people do.
Okay. Well, we got a bunch of interesting responses because there are clearly different interpretations of the game cheating. Our first comes from Daniel Sacramento.
I got a story for you about when Madden cheated me. So my boy and I have been friends for about 8 years and we've been playing Madden just as long. Unfortunately for me, he's been whooping my ass for years. I'd say his win percentage is easily 90% against me. So about a year ago, we played a game, and it was my time to shine. I kept it low scoring, playing ground and pound, doing my thing, and then Madden happened. So my boy gets a TD with about 3 minutes left to cut it to 17-16, and he's going for two to try and take the lead. I see that slant come in, pick the ball, and take it to the house. I'm thinking game's over. I guess Madden doesn't know what team I was because the game gave him the 2 points. Now I'm down 18-17, heated, but I'm thinking, it's fine. It's still my time to shine. I get the ball, I just need a field goal. Wrong. Madden made me kick the ball off to him after he scored a touchdown. He ran out the clock and I didn't get the ball back. I was devastated. Madden cheated, man. That was the last time we played Madden, too. Too busy to beat me every way possible now, so there's no reason to play. I just want my redemption, Bo. I've been training. I'm ready.
Hold up! The kickoff glitched?
Gave the ball to the wrong team.
There's no way I wouldn't have broken that PlayStation.
Yeah, how many have you broken multiple PlayStations in your gaming career?
Never broken a PlayStation, and I don't know how I never broke a controller.
I've broken controllers.
I've dinged controllers, right? Where they, you know, they wasn't good as new, but they still worked.
Now, if people break your controllers, are you like, no, you replace that at once?
Yeah, either that or we got to fight.
Yeah.
Like you have to acknowledge that this has to be fixed or we got to fight.
What's interesting about this one, too, is it's like, no, the game was actually cheating. Like, no, yes, Madden glitched.
Right. I expected, I know, the game actually cheated.
Well, these next two are pretty interesting because they're not video game related, but the game was still cheating. This next one comes from Hawk at Boston.
So about 20 years ago, I played AAU for Flatbush Youth Academy, playing in Coney Island against the Gauchos, and who's on the other team but the man himself, Bassett, Sebastian Telfair. Now, we had a pretty good team. His team was all right, but he was, you know, clearly heading above everybody. I'm pretty sure he ended that game about 48 points, and he showed up 10 minutes late. But about 1 minute before the end of the game, we're up by 4 points, and they start doing a little bit of hack a shack on our point guard. They think he's not a good free throw shooter, but he's pretty good, about 95%. So he starts hitting these free throws at the line, makes the first one, then he misses the second. They go down, they score, foul him again. Then he misses the first two, hits the front rim, boom, boom. And we're both looking, you know, the whole team's like, what is, Woody don't miss like that. He never misses. What's going on? So coach calls a timeout. He's like, Woody, what's going on? What you doing, man? What are you doing right here? He's like, listen, coach, you see that guy under the basket? Every time I go up there and shoot that free throw, he put his arms up. He got that thing on him. So we're like, what are you talking about? You go to the free throw line, see if they fire again, see what happens. They follow him again. You go to the free throw line. We all looking at the guy under the basket. He just, you know, slightly puts his arms up like he's scratching his head. And all we see is that hammer on him. So we all say, yo, we got to get the heck up out of here. Because the game's cheating. Ain't nobody going to get your shot over Sebastian. So they won the game, and we left with our lives.
What?
A little bit different than the Madden story.
You didn't expect you to get a voicemail like that, did you, Gabe?
No, I did not. And what's dope about the way we set up the voicemails is I get a transcription of what the voicemail is before I actually have to listen to it. So I'm like, no, I got to listen to this.
Oh, that's right. That makes sense. It's Google Voice.
Yes. Very interesting. Oh, very, very interesting. You've got to hear it to believe
yes.
it.
Yes.
All right. This last one, the guy didn't leave his name. It's a pretty interesting one.
Quicken Lane's ball against Georgia Tech versus Minnesota. I played for Georgia Tech. And one day during practice when we were on Detroit's field, we saw someone out here recording our practice. We knew it was Minnesota. We were like, okay, you know, we're going to talk trash to them, all that. Yeah, we're going to get them. We're going to get them. We approached our coach. We're like, yo, we're going to tell the media. He said, no, we're going to keep it quiet. It's all good. So we go to the game. We talk to trash. Say, yeah, you guys can't beat us. We got this triple option. No one ain't seen a triple option in the Big Ten. And they proceeded to beat the ever-living breaks off of us. It was not fun, not enjoyable. It was just bad all around. But, hey, I'm telling you, Minnesota out here, recording people practicing. I promise you that. They recorded last year's ball game and this year's. Look it up. That's all I'm saying.
Yo, did we just break some news?
This is a different kind of the game cheating.
Yo, they just cheating. What? Yo, Gabe, this is kind of a scandal.
And you're kind of pairing it with the Astro scandal with the game cheating earlier on in the podcast, too.
We should look into this. We got to do some actual work. We'll see. Good night. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsors, My Computer Career and ZipRecruiter. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Dalvin Brown of USA Today. Check out his story on Amazon firing employees for snooping on people's Ring cameras. Also, thank you to Ivan Pereira of ABC. Check out his story about a teenager working a NASA internship who discovered a whole damn planet. All right, remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven.